This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the after show. This is part two. It's going to be the continuation of my conversation with her, Mr. Asaf Cohen from Pay.com. Asaf, how was the part one in the conversation on your
own? That was great. That was so fun. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was watching it. The time was flying by. I'm taking tons of notes. We now have like about 12 minutes from scheduling here for us to do the after show. And I know that's not even enough time because I almost didn't hit record the second time because I got excited and we were just chatting. So much stuff to talk about. One of the things I love, and I just was talking to this right in between the two segments, is so cool to think about you having this blank canvas and starting over and creating this. I get to kind of do that with my clients. They're already established, so it's like kind of rebuilding or tearing down, you know, and remodeling a house from scratch, but not building it from beginning. So it's really amazing to think about what you're doing and building that. Especially like what you said about the co-CEO part, because I think that's important, is what are your strengths? What's needed for the organization as far as, you know, the success of it, and having also someone to bounce things off of. How did you determine co-CEO was the way to go, and or how did you know who the right person was for that? So, or did they find you? How did that come about?
So they found me. And it was it wasn't even such a romantic story. You know, I wish it was like more romantic outside of LinkedIn. They found me on LinkedIn. I had a couple conversations with the marketing guys, with my co-CEO now. And we loved, you know, I loved the concept, but I was honestly super happy where I was. But then they really kind of just persuaded me on a couple fronts, just on the company mission. And they're like, what would the role be that you're interested in? And I'm like, you know, let's just kind of think about that. And they presented like co-CEO, and I was like, okay, is that a thing? I'm like, let's do that. But look, we are a regulated financial institution across two markets. In Europe, we have a payments institution license, so we need to be regulated with the Central Bank of Cyprus, which is where our license comes from. So Tom, my co-CEO, is on that institution, right? He relocated to Cyprus, so he's now in Europe. And in the US, I'm the director on the license side of things. So I think just schematically, we needed to have, you know, two directors. But I think just more operationally, it just makes so much sense because such complementary skill sets. You know, Tom is thinking 24/7 on the tech side of things and really just kind of has a great handle on the team. Of course, we have a kick-ass CTO and product. But at the same time, like, he's just kind of a leader on that front. While at the same time, I'm really kind of thinking global sales, marketing, operations. So very complementary, especially as we look to become a global company.
I love it. And it makes sense, especially if you're, I don't want it to sound negative, but I can't think of another way to put it. You're fighting a war on two fronts, right? And so you need, like you said, generals running those fronts on the two sides, right? The Europe and the US. Now, naughty list. You had put this in the stuff that you had sent me and kind of like thinking about this and prepping for this. And it was in relation to the CRM. We talked about it in part one, where you're using Salesforce, which is a great platform, although it can be overly complex and overly cumbersome. I've helped build it out a few times. It's like an empty shell that you can just fill with as much stuff as you want and can easily get bloated and terrible. Obviously, automation technology helps. You want them to use the tools and the systems and the processes, right, so that you as management and leadership can actually report on it and make sure it's moving forward. What does that look like, the people who are performing versus the naughty list? What gets somebody on the naughty list in your mind from a sales leadership perspective?
Yeah, so look, I mean, going into the CRM, right, it's obviously, it's an engine, and we can tune this engine to become like a Formula One race car. Or it could just remain like, you know, just an engine that sits on the side of the road, or Toyota Corolla. So it just really kind of depends on us. We have the keys to this car, and we are just, you know, revving it up. So the engine is being developed. We're a net new company, as we discussed. But look, trying to get the salespeople to put in as least information into CRM, that's like kind of like our North Star. That's our objective. And there is a naughty list that we're developing, which is basically like once information is not updated by a certain period of time, based on the Salesforce handbook that we've created, at that point, every week, there's a naughty list and it shows like the salesperson who made it onto that naughty list and how many accounts and opportunities that are open. So it's almost kind of like a public square shaming that goes on within the sales team, right? Where it's just like, hey, you don't want to be the leader of the naughty list, right? Everybody's accounts, like, you know, we're all grown ups, we're all sales professionals here, so we need to just be accountable for our data and for our accounts. So that's the idea behind that.
I love that. I've always been a fan of that, of public stats, public metrics, especially in a way that's not actually trying to demean or put anyone down or pick on anyone in particular, but if there's an expectation and a standard, then the results should always be posted, and it's up to people to take responsibility for that or not. However, I've seen in many organizations and worked with companies where they're like, yeah, we don't want to post that kind of information. We don't want to post the stats for everyone to see because it'll make some people feel bad who aren't performing well. What's your thoughts, response? Like, how do you address that from the beginning so that everyone's...
There's no room for ego.
They know what to expect.
No room for ego in this company. So it's, you know, if you feel bad about us posting that you haven't been performing and updating your metrics, then maybe that's not the right place for you. Now, on the flip side, of course, we're also updating the metrics on the good things, right? Hey, this is the top sales leader. This is the top, he's closed the most accounts, the most outreach on the SDR side of things. We're not publicizing only the negative, of course. You know, we're really kind of complementing that with all the successful metrics. So I think the idea here is just check your ego at the door, and it's okay. We're not worried about offending you in that sense. We're just all here professionals. We're looking to do our job. I think kind of the vision that I always had for Pay.com when I originally joined was, you know, here's the blueprint of the company, right? This is what we're all working towards. We are all on the assembly line because at the end of the day, this is what companies do. But at the end of the day, we're all driving this car and we're all driving it together. So we have ownership in the car. Of course, there's stock options in the company, et cetera. So we are truly all owners of it. But we know what the blueprint is and we're all just doing our job. In order to do that job, you just have to make sure you update, you know, your sales metrics.
Yeah, and I love several things about that I just want to highlight. One is you're not just showing the negative, you're showing the positive. You're showing the whole picture. And I think it's important because I see people, sometimes it's the HR side that's worried about people getting upset because they're either used to seeing companies where it's only the negative or it's only the shaming. They don't want that to happen. They don't want people to feel bad or affect the culture. And if you're doing both sides, then it's fair. If people are doing well, great. If they're not doing well, then fix it. And then the other thing I'm thinking about, and you referenced this in part one about, you know, professional sports teams and the coaches who, you know, the best coaches played at some level, right? They might not have been the superstar, but they played at some level, so they get it, right? And they can coach from that experience. But in a professional sports team, everyone knows everyone's stats. It's all public. It's all there. If you're not pulling your weight, everybody knows. The whole world knows your stats, right? Not just even your team. And it's up to you to either fix it or there's consequences, right? If you're not a performing member of the team, it's just not going to work out. So I love that. And I think that's important. And I appreciate you sharing both. And then your comment about no ego, right? It's one team on this mission together. It's not about individuals, their egos, which can be difficult when filling a team full of salespeople that have uncapped commissions. And, you know, there can be big egos and big experiences at play. And people want to be the big shot. You know, but it's one team. So last question here that I want to ask. So you were telling me an interesting story before where Asaf is actually your middle name. And then it led into you telling me your first name and then where you were born, where you grew up and kind of that story. I think that's a fascinating origin story of kind of your childhood that's not standard for most people.
Yeah. So my English name is Alex. Oftentimes, most of my friends won't even know that because I've always gone by Asaf. I was born in Jerusalem. My father works for the government, And as a child, we bounced around between LA, New York, Jerusalem, in that order. I think there were supposed to be some other countries and cities in there, but my mother put her foot down. She's like, no, not happening. So pretty much until like seventh grade, I've been living in that triangle. So saying goodbye to friends, hi to friends, new schools. And I think ultimately, you know, after a lot of therapy, of course, it ended up like making me who I am and building the character. So I've always been working for international sales organizations, and I've traveled the world. You could drop me anywhere in the world and I will make some good friends and I'll be able to acclimate to that culture. My last passport, I filled it to the last page. I needed an extension passport.
The extension.
Yeah, it was great. It was like such a victory. Of course, since COVID, I haven't traveled as much, but it's been a fun journey. Of course, I had no say on all that back and forth, but it was fun. You know, it was, if I could do it again, I would do it again. Absolutely.
Well, and I love that you appreciated that, even if it was through lots of therapy, but like that you took from that, you know, things that made you who you are and strengthen you and the ability to just make friends and relationships anywhere you go. And then just a global perspective, which I think is huge for the venture you're on now, right? It's not just one area, one location, one kind of path that you're on. You got to see lots of different things, experience lots of different things, and then, you know, I can see how that leverages into the strengths you have and the vision for what you're building and, you know, seeing it from a much bigger picture, especially, you know, the game that you guys are playing at pay.com. Mr. Asaf, thank you for being on here. Appreciate this. After show was super fun. Of course, you ran out of time. We're going to have to do this again. I'm excited to do this in a bit of time when you've got things up and running and we kind of revisit it and talk about the lessons learned once things are out there up and running. I think that would make for a really fun conversation. Again, for people tuning in, make sure the links will be in the show notes, but check out pay.com. Obviously, that's what we're talking about mostly. You can find Mr. Asaf Cohen on LinkedIn as well. Chat with him. Obviously, that works. You know, he is accessible there, and we'll chat with you. And so, you know, connect and then find a lot of the content. If you are a micro merchant, he mentioned in the first part, and I didn't really address it at the end, but go to pay.com, the blog on there, lots of payment information. If you want to be educated on all that, check out that blog. Mr. Asaf, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion
Show. Awesome. Thanks, Jason.
All right, and I appreciate everyone tuning in. Make sure to check out part one. Super great conversation. Very helpful for anyone who's running a company, building a company, leading a sales team, even salespeople. We want to learn some lessons from it, from the view, from the leadership side. Make sure to check that out. Until next time, keep selling with Authentic Persuasion.